And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This is a Sandler Training Hour. Sandler, we specialize in ongoing reinforcement. Through Sandler, we give our clients the tools necessary to know how to build a selling system within their organization. My guest today is Mike Crandall. Mike is going to share with us a little bit about how do I incorporate the Sandler selling system if I'm doing public presentations. Mike, welcome to the program.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me again.
Share with our listeners who you are, a little bit about you, and maybe a plug for your book.
My name is Mike Crandall. I own and operate our Sandler office in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I've been a Sandler coach for about 7.5 years now. Kind of cover most of the state of Oklahoma. We're the only ones in the whole state. The book that Jim mentioned, I was being honored to be one of the people they've asked to put together a book. It will actually come out in October, so middle of October of 2016, it'll be available publicly, called Managerial Motivation, The Sandler Way. And it's really a handbook for managers and leaders on understanding how to learn more about what motivates people themselves and people that might be on their teams, whether they're officially employees or volunteers that might work for them or be part of their organization in some way, shape, or form.
Let's talk about presenting yourself in a way publicly that harnesses the Sandler tool. So what differentiates Sandler from a traditional sales approach?
One of the things that is part of the core fundamental basis of Sandler is making it about others and then tapping into emotion rather than features and benefits. When you're having to present something, and this could be whether I've got to present an idea internally to my boss or whether I've got to present at a board meeting or an idea at a speaking engagement, there's a lot of similarities between presenting yourself and selling. In our office, Jim, we've got a lot of clients that are nonprofit organizations. One thing that's happened an awful lot is that I've gotten a phone call from the executive director or the CEO that says, hey, Mike, this organization's asked us to come in and pitch to them about why they should give us some money. We've all heard something like that from clients, you know, sometimes for profit, sometimes not for profit. The very first time this ever happened, I said, well, happy to help. What are you hoping I can do? And they said, well, we've got an entire presentation put together. Will you sit in on it and maybe give us some feedback? And I said, well, I'm happy to. And you know, this is a nonprofit. They've been on a retainer with us for a while. And we do some executive coaching and some leadership and management, sales and customer service development for them. And so I go and I sit down and it's a couple of their employees and a board member and one of the participants in some of their programs. And they had been invited to this organization to do, for lack of better terms, kind of a Shark Tank style presentation about why people should fund some of the initiatives they're working on. They went through it. It was designed to be a 10-minute presentation with 10 minutes of Q&A. And so they did their pitch, if you would, for the first 10 minutes. And then at the end, they looked at me and they said, so give us some feedback. My natural style is very critical parent.
Uh-huh.
I cringed a little bit and I said, how nice or how hard do you want me to be? And they said, we're asking for a lot of money. Be as hard as you want. And I said, okay. I said, well, here's a couple of good things. Other than that, it pretty much sucked. and you know, I did it as nurturingly as I could. And they kind of joked a little bit. And I said, here's the things that I think we really missed. I said, you guys use Sandler in so much of what you do. You've changed some of your marketing and your advertising, your recruiting and your sales approach to incorporate Sandler. And one of the core fundamentals of Sandler is tapping into emotion. I said, you guys just went through 10 minutes of pure content delivery, one-way dialogue or monologue that did not address emotion in any way, shape, or form. And they all looked at each other and they looked at me and they're like, oh my goodness, you're right. And I said, you're asking for a lot of money to fund some causes within your nonprofit. I said, tapping into emotion is always important, but it's absolutely essential in what you're doing.
Right.
I think that one of the things that so many people do when they present is they forget that. When we can emotionally engage the audience, we have different outcomes. You know, there's really two ways to emotionally engage an audience. You can use one or you can use both, but asking questions that make them lean in. So, hey, here's what, you know, I'm worried about, or here's what I'm thinking about, and here's something that I find matters in your industry, and there's thousands of different examples, but when we ask questions that make people lean in, we've started to get some emotional engagement. The second way that we get emotional engagement is that we use stories. When we use stories when we make a presentation, we can paint a picture. A high percentage of the population is visual, and if we do a good enough job, we can paint the picture where someone who's driven by visual, meaning that they visually take in the world, we can paint a picture for them where they almost feel like they're there.
Right.
So many people don't do that when they present. Jim, I know you've seen this, and so many of us have. We see somebody, they're in charge of doing a presentation, and they put all their effort and energy into a whole bunch of PowerPoint slides, and they stand there and they read them and they put everybody to sleep.
Right. Death by PowerPoint.
There's, you know, the talking heads, and I've heard that reference several times where, you know, it's just, you know, some head standing there, you know, reading what's on the PowerPoint screen. When we can use stories or ask questions, we can engage people emotionally. In Sandler, we talk about the pain compartment within our submarine so much, and most powerful emotion is pain. When we can use stories and ask questions that engage people emotionally, especially if there's pain, present pain or future pain around that, we have a totally different interaction than just standing there and spewing information.
And so when you're presenting that picture, the narrative that you're inviting someone into, are you then also incorporating those third-party stories as part of the invitation?
When we can use stories and analogies and ask questions that get people to, I just like to use the phrase lean in, meaning that sometimes they actually physically lean a little bit closer to us. We can engage that. If I'm in this case, a nonprofit, and I want to tug on some heartstrings to open up purse strings, phrase that I use a lot, I've got to find a way to tug on the heartstrings. And if I just stand up there and go, do you realize there's this many people who struggle with this, and that's this percentage, and it costs this much money? Sandler rule straight out of the book, people buy for their reasons, not the salesperson's. Well, we can make that a speaker or a presentation rule pretty quickly by, you know, just changing a couple of words. Audiences will be engaged for their reasons, not the speaker's reason. We can't do that by standing in front and just talking. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that so many people make when they have to have some type of a presentation.
If you're building that presentation, you need to look at what is the point you're trying to make and then back up to a story that would illustrate what? Somebody who has had that problem and solved it?
Let me share with you an example. I've got a few clients that are churches, and occasionally they'll engage us for some consulting or training. And one of them shared with me that they had the opportunity to ask for some money to do an expansion initiative, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had me come in. They had created all these PowerPoints with massive amounts of information of demographics and statistics of where people were building and how many people already had a belief and faith and how many people were Christians and how many affiliated with a church and how many had never been to church, and all the statistics like almost made my head explode. They were so overwhelming.
Right.
When I said, let me ask, what are you looking to accomplish? And they said, well, we want them to give us some money to work on this project. And I said, what about all of those statistics is going to make somebody go, oh my goodness, we better give them some money? And they all kind of looked at me and they went, well, we never thought about it. And I went, just because there's X percentage in this geography that report no church home, do you think anybody's going to jump up and go, oh my goodness, here's my checkbook? You know, as we kind of went a little deeper, they went, no. And I said, but you'd mentioned that there's a school close by to where you guys want to do this project. I said, I want you to think about, because we found out the people they were presenting to were people in church leadership, some of them official clergy, some of them lay people. So they were already believers in some way, shape, or form. I said, why don't you think about finding a story that you can share about some kid in the community who doesn't have a family at home who's ever going to introduce them to Jesus? And all of a sudden they went, oh my goodness. And they totally changed their approach when they found out that they could use a story, because there happened to be a school close by, and the school has, I think it was 800 or 900 kids in it, and the line that they actually came up with was something like this. It's, you know what breaks my heart? When I looked at the school over there across the field, and I know that there's 900 kids in that school, and by the rough statistics of the community, 700 of them are in homes where they're never going to have the opportunity to be introduced to Jesus. And all of a sudden, everybody they were presenting to totally leaned in, and it was a completely different interaction.
Awesome. My guest today is Mike Crandall. Mike, share with the listeners your contact information in case there's somebody there who would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I run the Sandler office in Oklahoma City. Easiest way to always find us is probably just Google Sandler Oklahoma City. But our phone number is area code 405-844-1700. Or if you ever want to email, my email is mike.crandall@sandler.com. mike.crandall@sandler.com.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Jim Stevens, your host for the Sandler Training Hour. We're going to be back just after this with more of Mike sharing with us, how do I convert an informational seminar into something that's emotional and motivational? We'll be back just after this. And welcome back. This is the Sandler Training Hour, and I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Mike Crandall. We've been talking a little bit about how do I make a presentation where I'm trying to convey a body of information in a way that is engaging to the listener so that they buy emotionally. We all know that people buy emotionally, and when I'm presenting, I'm really selling them on some information that inherently will have some version of a call to action. Mike was telling us a little bit about an engagement he had with a nonprofit organization he was helping on fundraising. Share with us as a bridge, Mike, that story you were telling about the tagline changed the whole dynamic of the presentation.
So this was for a church that was looking to expand some of their programming, and they were asking for money from a larger organization. And they had all these statistics that they thought mattered. And when I helped them realize there was nothing emotional, they changed kind of the beginning of their presentation, if you would. And this was a formal environment where they were presenting to a group. The first thing they did is they changed their approach to share, you know what breaks my heart? When I look across the field in our community, and I look at the elementary school that has, and I know that X amount of them are growing up in homes where they'll never have the opportunity to be introduced to Jesus. It's the type of emotional thing that delivered properly in bonding and rapport and some of the elements of Sandler, body language and tonality, et cetera, which I'll come back to, matter. But when we tap into emotion and we get people to go, whoa, I didn't realize that, or I never thought about that, or that's scary to me, or that's exciting to me, we move things along faster if it's possible because we've now engaged them emotionally.
Yeah, when somebody's engaged emotionally, they stop being sold and they start selling themselves. If they can insert themselves into that narrative, like in what you're suggesting, if I'm a member of that audience thinking, yeah, that is tragic, what can I do to help? There's that at the very beginning of the presentation, you're creating that hunger for the audience, or at least some key members of the audience, to take action. So what other suggestions do you give in building that presentation?
Jim, it's an interesting thing, and you know this as a Sandler coach and a Sandler trainer, that there's a lot of different ways to use the Sandler submarine. What I coach my clients to do is use the steps in the Sandler submarine to build what you want to deliver. I like to tell all of my clients that step one is bonding and rapport. And we've got the seven compartments of the submarine, but I like to say step zero is pattern interrupts. Sandler, we talk a lot about pattern interrupts. So I always say that step zero, when we can have some type of a pattern interrupt at the very beginning that maybe even has an emotional component to it, like the one I shared, you know what breaks my heart when I look at that school, and people lean in. So I encourage them to build their interaction, and they're like they'd be following the submarine. How do I have a pattern interrupt catches people's attention right away? And then bonding and rapport, which we like to say, and you know, it's step one of the submarine, but it's also the skin of the submarine. It never ends. Bonding and rapport is about understanding behavior and having subconscious comfort and connection. And it's about body language and tonality and not just words. It's about understanding disc. It's about okay, not okay. It's about listening. It's about all of the ways that we can create an environment where somebody's comfortable with us. And that bonding and rapport is so important, because if I could have the absolute perfect words in my presentation, but if my tonality and or my body language is poor, I'm already disconnecting from the audience. One of the things, and Jim, you've been around Sandler for a while, you've probably seen this, most people before they start Sandler, they focus all their energy on the word. In the presentation, those elements of communication, especially if it's a live thing, or even more, if I don't use tonality properly and raise and lower, speed up and slow down and emphasize and have pauses in the right place, I'm not getting my message across. So often, all of the things that are part of Sandler bonding and rapport, people don't take into account. The next thing that I share is that use the upfront contract, the next compartment in the submarine, to lay the foundation. Hey, we're going to spend 15 minutes together as I share information with you. Here's a couple things that are going to happen at the end, and let people know what you want at the end. At the end, I'm going to ask you to make a donation or, you know, whatever it might be. Obviously, that varies from thing to thing, but when we take away the element of surprise by using upfront contracts in a presentation, it lets people know. I speak a lot professionally, actually a member of the National Speakers Association, and it's amazing how when we do, you know, even if I get hired to do a keynote talk and I let people know, hey, we're going to spend 45 minutes together, I'm going to cover some points about whatever the topic is, we're not going to take a break, and I'm not going to have time to ask questions because they've got somebody coming on stage right after me, I can physically, from the stage, watch everybody have a little bit greater level of comfort if we've taken away the questions and or the surprises that they might not want. The concept within Sandler of an upfront contract can be super powerful when presenting.
Now you get to the body of your presentation. What are you building into that?
And not every presentation should have all things about pain, budget, and decision, but if we use the concept of Sandler that pain, budget, decision, those compartments make up the body, then I've got to go into what's the context and the environment and the audience of the presentation, but am I tapping into emotion? Am I understanding the parameters of what somebody is or isn't doing about that emotion or what they have or haven't thought of or heard of? And then what are the next steps? If I'm actually asking somebody for some type of a donation or a grant or funding, I should address that in my presentation. You know, hey, here's what we're looking to do and here's what it does. And here's the, you know, the pain that it solves, for lack of better terms. We find that for an investment of X amount of dollars or X amount of time or energy, here's what we can accomplish. And we can literally use the concept of pain budget decision to frame what we want to do there. And then we can actually use the fulfillment compartment to just share a little bit about what it is. And then we can use the post-sell to kind of wrap up and use that to go back and maybe reiterate some points or reemphasize some things that we want to reemphasize.
When I'm putting together that fulfillment step, that's where I'm really asking them to take action. I'm tying that back to the emotion that I created during my presentation. What are some of the key components in making a call to action effective?
If you can have a specific and timely call to action, it's best. And obviously, there's a lot of variables there, but one of the things that I've found for nonprofits when I coach nonprofits through some type of a funding or grant ask is inviting people to a very specific thing coming up. Hey, we've got this program where we're working with homeless people next Thursday from 4 to 5 at this location. If something that we talked about resonated with you, we'd love to visit with you about coming to maybe hang out and just watch or be part of it next Thursday. But when we can make it specific rather than, hey, if you ever want any information, here's my email, which is how we leave so many things in sales and presentation, we just leave them kind of wishy-washy and open-ended. We can make it specific and timely and then also let people know that no is acceptable. If you're in the audience and you hear me say, Jim, if this didn't resonate with you at all and this cause is not anything that matters to you, which is very okay, just let me know because I don't ever want to bug you. And you know, the concept in Sandler of permission to say no can greatly change what the outcomes of those interactions are.
You really, as a listener, are going to feel far less manipulated or taken advantage of if you know you have that opportunity to say no and it's freely accepted.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
If I'm asking specifically for a donation, what's the rule of thumb there? How do I make that request without sounding like I've got my hands out and I'm begging?
Yeah, well, again, Jim, I think that there's a lot of variables. If I'm looking for $50,000 to fund a specific project, I should be specific about that. But then I should let people know that, hey, I don't need necessarily all $50,000 from one person. If you feel compelled to do something between $500 and $1,000, that's very okay. But giving people the ability to connect on a level that's comfortable for them, dealing with a lot of nonprofits, most organizations don't get one $50,000 check to cover something. Occasionally they do. There's always differences. But if you usually 500 people that might be donating $100 to $1,000 a piece to get to 50,000. Again, if I can give people clear and specific options, it creates a much more comfortable environment than leaving it wishy-washy and, hey, if you ever want to donate, send me an email and I'll come out and visit with you. If we've tapped into emotion, there's some people that want to do something right now. Right. And if I don't give them that opportunity, I may have lost it.
So true. My guest today is Mike Crandall. Mike, share your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mike Crandall, our Sandler office is in Oklahoma City. Our phone number at our office is area code 405-844-1700. My email is Mike, M-I-K-E dot Crandall, C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L at Sandler.com.
Mike Crandall, we're going to be back with more of Mike in our final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. Our next segment is our Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to interview local and regional entrepreneurs, hear a little bit about their vision, what they have done to create a change in our community. It allows you to meet the folks who might be making a difference in the Valley here. If you know of somebody or you yourself are interested in being on that segment of the program, please contact me, Jim Stevens, area code 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. And when we get back after Entrepreneur Radio, I'm going to ask Mike to tell us, how does selling fit in to an entrepreneur's effort to build something from nothing? We'll be back just after this. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This segment of our program, I'd like to introduce you to entrepreneurs, people of influence who I've met, and I'm fortunate to have with me Brian Wiley. Brian is a man of many talents.
Oh, boy. That's a big order.
He is. He's the owner and founder of Tree City Advisors, financial advisor. Tell us about your background, because you've done radio shows forever. Talk to us.
Yeah.
Just introduce the folks to who you are and what you do.
Okay. Yeah. My name is Brian Wiley. I'm a financial advisor. Been in the business for 16 years as a one-on-one financial advisor with households, individual investors. And somehow I fell into doing radio. And I say somehow because I started working for a gentleman out in California that had a radio program, was well-respected in the community. And I learned how to do radio from him. So over time, I started getting involved in doing the radio program with him. And then eventually I started doing it on my own, started my own firm, later sold that firm and always did radio. So for 15 years, five nights a week, in some cases, I was doing a national radio program during the day, and other times was doing television news, you know, six times a day for about 2 years. And that just wore myself out. But I'm not 30 any longer, so I realized I don't care about all that stuff. I just want to do what works.
So how'd you do the migration from that background into financial planning?
I was a marketing student in college with a finance emphasis as well. So I like doing finance. I've always loved people. I've always said that a good financial advisor is not necessarily great with numbers, but great with people.
Good. I love that.
And so I started as a financial advisor back in the late 90s when the market was hot. I was a broker. I did all the wrong things. I had to learn to do the business wrong first to later do it right. Radio was something that I did about 2 years after becoming licensed as a broker and then a financial advisor and so on.
What sets Tree City Advisors apart from other financial service providers?
Well, first of all, I say I do it completely different because I've gotten rid of every license that allows me to sell anything. So when I say I'm an advisor for somebody, I am only a licensed advisor. We're a registered investment advisory firm, and I bring advisory back to the truest sense of the word. If somebody says to me, Brian, I want to buy a home, what's the home that I should be choosing? What's the payment that I need? I work with them on that. If somebody says that they're going to go negotiate a car purchase, I have sat with a customer inside a Lithia Ford, helping them purchase a vehicle and making sure that the deal was right. Advisory work is a partnership between me and that household, making sure that what's happening inside their household is always in their best interest. So I'm a fiduciary, and that's what's different. I think a lot of times, guys in my industry, we hide behind the financial advisory title, instead really motivated to just sell products because that's what generates lots of revenue. Whereas I look at it saying, I want to generate lots of long-term relationships. The revenue will follow, and it has.
The way you get paid is by, do you charge a fee for services?
Yeah, I charge three different ways. So one is I do an asset-based management fee. I have some clients that don't want to manage their own money. So I do the investing for them. We choose what to buy and when to sell it and things like that. I don't call them first. I just do it. So we take discretion on the accounts. And that's called an asset-based management fee, typically around 1%. The other way to do it is just a flat fee. Somebody can come in, say, Brian, let's do some planning. Let's do a strategy design. We'll put a time limit on that contract, and then they'll pay me a flat fee. We'll get to the end of the contract. Hopefully, I performed well, and then they'll go off on their way. So I like that. part of the business. That is not a recurring revenue part of the business, but I think it is in most people's best interest to come in, get the work done, and then go off and do it on their own, save some money. And then the last piece is I have a self-directed investment program. It's a guided self-directed investment program called TreeSap. And that is another way that I generate income.
So TreeSap, great name. Self-guided, explain that one to us.
So the SAP part is an acronym. It's S-A-A-P-P, Strategic Allocation App, which is the APP part of it. What it is it's my allocations, somebody's account value, they put their account value in, and then my program will divide their money up into a specific number of shares of a specific security and multiple securities. So it designs the whole portfolio for them, and then they go into hopefully their TD Ameritrade account, because that's what I optimized it for, and then they'll follow those trades. They'll just do those trades. It's not an active trading program. It's actually just a long-term strategic allocation program where somebody can kind of set it and forget it until my program notifies them to log back in and to trade again. So $200 a year, I've got clients that are managing well over $1 million.
Wow.
With that. And it's a very inexpensive way to manage money.
And it gives them that ability to control where their investments are and look at it as frequently as they want.
And in really emphasis on that word ability, confidence, competence, education. These are the most dangerous things to Wall Street, is when somebody understands what they're doing. As I've always said, there are two types of investors out there. There's an emotional investor, and then there's a strategic investor. And you get to choose which one you want to be. If you're lazy, you're going to end up being the emotional investor, because that's by default where we are. We operate on fear and greed. But if you're a strategic investor, through training, you can stay in your foxhole when the bullets are flying on Wall Street. Those people make money from the emotional investors. And our markets operate on emotions. We need emotional investors to come in and supply the dollars to us strategic investors. So you choose.
Wow, that is awesome.
Thanks.
So one of the things that you do is you provide that stability and training, I'm guessing,
for
your clients.
It's about the training. Yep, it's about the training, whether it's in a classroom environment or one-on-one. It's about the training. It's about that education and empowering somebody to ultimately fire their broker. That's what my goal is in my career, is to teach people how to fire their broker and to hire their advisors only when they need them, but to get these people off of their accounts and reduce the drag of those extra expenses.
Wow, that sounds like it could amount to quite a bit of savings. Any guess what the average?
Yeah, I've got a great example, actually. It was about 2 months ago, I got hired by a family that they're paying well over $11,000 a year right now with their current advisor. That's because of how inefficient their investing is. By the time we're done with this one-year training program, they're going to be at about $800 all in. That's their trading fees, their investment fees. That is the DIY investment allocation tool. Plus, they get to walk away with the education. So compare $11,000 a year to $800 a year. And we're talking about $450,000. Over the last 10 years, they've paid their advisor over $100,000 that has stayed with the advisor and not in their account.
Wow.
Okay, so we're talking about, it's very significant. It's like trying to drag a horse through sand. You know, it'd be easier if you could flip the horse over and get his legs out of the sand at least. We're always going to have some drag. And so we want to reduce the drag to as little as possible.
As I hear your business model, I'm thinking, how do you make money? Because you don't have that recurring revenue.
I do through the asset-based management clients. And what I determined is that not everybody is suited to handle these on their own, handle their own trades, to push their own buttons, sometimes because they can't separate their emotions from the training. And so a lot of times it's just, we're going to make a really well-informed decision. You're not going to do it on your own. I'll take care of it for you. We're going to meet quarterly. That's the way I do it.
So how do you help someone migrate from that emotional investor to a strategic investor?
Training. And it's all about the training. It's just like what you do at Sandler. You train people so it becomes ingrained in them. As I've always said, I can't imagine that there's any person in the military in the middle of a war situation that is comfortable with bullets flying around them, but they start to lean and rely on their training, and the training helps them get to their objective. And so if I train my clients and I train them well, it'll at least help them minimize the emotional aspect of it. And I get paid well to do this. I'm not going to lie to you about that. I do. I get paid well to do it. And I think we have good success because we're training people right.
And do you offer public seminars? How do you dish out your training?
So in the training part of it, we call it financial independence training. It's our program. Tree City Advisors owns it. Financial independence training can be done one-on-one with advisor or with a client and an advisor, or in a classroom situation. And we have a new class starting actually September 6th. It will go through for a month. It's a 4-week class, And that is in a classroom situation, saves people a lot of money, but it's in a classroom situation. So it's not as intimate as that one-on-one advisory situation.
So if somebody wanted to attend that, how would they get signed up?
Go to my website, treecityadvisors.com, or go to idahosmoneyshow.com. We've got all kinds of learning resources there and an events tab if you'd like to go to educational events. It's all there. Idahosmoneyshow.com, probably the best website.
And how much, what's the fee to attend that?
For the class, it's $300 in this case. This is our first one, so it's our pilot class, and we're explaining to people that we're all in this one together. If you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. If you kind of liked it, but you want to take the next class, we'll let you take that one for free. But you have to realize that we're generating materials and trying to understand our own model for this classroom experience, and we're going to develop it kind of using you as a guinea pig. It's deductible, so that's nice. And then again, of course, you get some one-on-one time with an advisor.
How many hours is it?
Total time on this one would be 2 hours a night, 5 nights a class, so 10 hours. And then meeting with an advisor, you get a one-on-one time with the advisor, so about 11 hours. And I believe that people will walk out of there feeling empowered. That's the most important part.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you wouldn't walk out feeling like you know more and are able to handle things better.
That's it. In our industry, my industry, is not a great industry for real trust. I think a lot of people think that they can trust their advisor or their broker, but as I always tell them, you need to ask questions. Yeah. And a lot of times they say, well, I don't know what questions to ask. That's what you get out of this training.
Give your contact information one more time, Brian.
I do. Go to idahosmoneyshow.com or listen Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. on 580 KIDO. Or you can go right to my website at treecityadvisors.com. I'm there in the office in downtown Boise. I'm willing to meet with clients in Nampa. We've got a place that we can meet out there as well.
Great guest. So glad to have you here on the show, Entrepreneur Radio. That's awesome. I'm Jim Stevens, your host. You can reach me at area code 208-429-9275. If you or you know someone or you yourself would like to be on this program, please reach out to us. We can also be attained on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. And welcome to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Mike Crandall. Mike is a Sandler trainer in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He's been sharing with us about how to build Sandler into the components of a presentation so you're not presenting intellectual information only, but rather building in an emotional element. Mike, I think the most important part of any presentation is how do we follow up? What are some of your suggestions for that follow-up piece?
You know, right before we went on break, we talked about having clear next steps. And in Sandler, we talk about get a yes, get a no, get a clear next step. Eliminate the wishy-washy, let me think it over. And I think that the same is true here. If I'm actually having some type of a presentation, am I giving people choices they can make, you know, to use Sandler methodology and that, you know, some Chinese menu options of how to move forward or if they want to, and then also giving them permission to say no. So often people feel pressured or pushed or manipulated to do something. And if somebody's not interested and not a good fit, let's identify that so we don't waste our time creating an awkward situation or environment where they feel like we're chasing them and we feel like we're chasing them and nobody likes that.
I think if they end up feeling stalked, they're going to have a less favorable outlook towards your nonprofit in this case, and that's certainly bad press we don't want.
Just give you a super quick example. My home church that we're heavily involved in, there was a family who recently joined, and I've done a lot of work with our church. I've given them a lot of ways to use Sandler. And so I was visiting with the husband and wife, the mother and father of this family who recently joined. And I said, can I ask you, I said, what made our church the most comfortable one for you? And why'd you decide to join if you're willing to share? And the husband said something that's really resonated with me pretty deeply. He said, we visited a lot of churches as we were church shopping, and every one of them listed hundreds of reasons why they were the best church for us. When we visited with the leadership team and the ministry team here, they said, we may not be the best fit for you. Our desire is to help your family find the church that is the best fit for you. And he said, just that tiny difference created an environment where my family was more comfortable. And it turns out that it was the most comfortable fit for us. But he said, of the dozen churches we visited, this was the only one that wasn't trying to do a hard sell on me. You can put that in almost any nonprofit that's out there, regardless of what your world is, and you can apply it to pretty much any type of presentation that's out there.
We mentioned on the last segment that we're going to talk about entrepreneurs and the role selling has in building an organization. Share with us some of your thoughts on entrepreneurial selling.
I'm going to share a couple of different thought processes here, Jim. And when I talk to people who are entrepreneurs and talk to them about business and what to focus on and how selling fits into that, there's two really different messages that I like to get them to think about. And one of them is this. If you think about your business, and it could be any business, any size, any industry, is a train, meaning a locomotive, and every part of your business has to become a car on that train. Product has to become a car, and maybe research and development and marketing and sales and purchasing and logistics and human resources. And all of those can exist even in a solopreneur business. If one of those cars has to become the engine that pulls the train everywhere, which one does it have to be? And if we're really honest with that, there's only one answer. It has to be sales. You know, there's a line that, you know, Jim, I know you're well familiar with. It's been around for decades, that nothing happens until somebody sells something. I could come up with the best product or service that's ever existed in the history of man, but if we don't have some effort out there to focus on selling it and putting together a methodology to sell it, I'm hoping for success. And hope is not a strategy. It's a phrase that's been used a ton. So that I call it the business train analogy is one thing that I encourage entrepreneurs to think about. Because most entrepreneurs did not start their business because they enjoy selling. They started their business because they've got an idea or a passion or a product or maybe a hobby they think they can monetize. And one day they wake up and they're like, hey, who's going to sell this? And that usually doesn't work out very well.
That is so true. The old adage, build it and they will come, doesn't necessarily always pan out.
No, I always joke this way, Jim. There's only two things I've ever seen build it and they will come work. Apple stores, meaning Apple electronics. If they put one of those up, it seems like everybody shows up and they come out of the woodwork. And usually Starbucks coffee. Outside of those two things, build it and they will come doesn't seem to work.
In an entrepreneurial business, what other elements involve the selling?
So I always tell people to think about it this way, and it's not necessarily just specifically an element, but if you really strip away everything that matters in your business to three things, those three things in a business are thing number one, and I've just got to put them in some order, not saying this is number one because it's right. Most important, but I've got to have a product or service that I'm selling. If I don't have something I'm selling, I'm not going to go anywhere. I mean, I have to have something that is the business. Thing number two that's of crucial importance is finding and securing new business. So thing number one is the product or the service that is the business. Thing number two is finding and securing new business. And that can be clients, that can be subscribers, that can be donors, that can be members. I mean, depends on what the business is. Thing number three is maintaining and growing existing business. So how do I do more business with my existing clients? How do I expand? How do I take care of them, make sure they renew or whatever that is? If I look at those three things, again, one of them is the product or the service. One of them is finding and securing new business. One of them is maintaining and growing existing business. Two of those three things become sales functions. And if I don't have some type of very specific methodology around what I'm going to do and when and where and why and how I'm going to do it for finding and securing new business and maintaining and growing existing business, number one, the product or service doesn't matter. And what I see so many entrepreneurs struggle with is that they put all their time and their energy into number one and not number two or number three, and then they go out of business because they don't have any sales.
Right. Can think of multiple products that were really great products that ended up not going anywhere. And it wasn't for the lack of an idea or even functionality. It was just a lack of feet on the streets that turned it into action.
I think one of the things, and Jim, I know you've started and run several different businesses throughout your career, and you've been a Sandler coach for a long time. We've both seen this where somebody's got a great idea. They might even have a little bit of a base of a business and they want to grow it, but they think that they can outsource sales. They think that they can just hire somebody for that, or, you know, I'll just hire a lead generation company and, you know, the world will transform. I tell entrepreneurs this. Sometimes they get it right away. Sometimes it takes time. Nobody's going to sell it with the passion that you will as the person who birthed it. If this was your product that you created or your service that you invented, you're going to be greatly disappointed if you think you can hire somebody that's going to sell it as well as you. Wrapping your head around that and realizing that I don't have to be a cheesy, stereotypical used car salesperson to be good is a journey that everybody's capable of, but they don't always put the desire in and the commitment to get better at it.
It reminds me of the story of breakfast, bacon and eggs. The chicken is involved. The pig is committed. And I think in any entrepreneurial effort, the owner is committed. And that's why I think, Mike, we have such a passion to drive this towards a successful adaptation.
Absolutely. If entrepreneurs can wrap their head around those three things, I got to have the product and service, I got to find and secure new business, and then I've got to maintain and grow existing business. And obviously those change over time. If right. I have no existing business, number three disappears pretty fast.
Right.
But right. I've got to make sure that there's money coming from somewhere, and just having an awesome product or service doesn't bring in money. The one piece of pushback that I always get with somebody is like, well, I'll just find investors. Then we go back to the segment we recorded before the last interview or before the last commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm an entrepreneur and I'm looking for investment, now I'm in that presentation mode where I've got to present myself, because right now I'm the product.
Right. And if I don't have a way to sell me, who's going to buy or invest in my product or service? Mike, you've been a great guest today. Really appreciate your insights once again, and thank you for being a repeat guest. Give your contact information in case somebody listening would like to reach out to you.
Absolutely. And are you okay if I plug my book one more
time? Please do. Absolutely.
So again, Mike Crandall. I'm a Sandler coach in Oklahoma. I run an operator office in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Phone number in our office, if you want to ever reach out, is area code 405-844-1700. It's again, 405-844-1700. Email, if you ever want to email me, is Mike, M-I-K-E, dot Crandall, C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L, at Sandler.com. And in October, here in a few weeks of 2016, I will have my book coming out, which is Managerial Motivation, The Sandler Way. It's really a handbook for managers and owners and leaders to understand employee motivation better, as well as their own motivation. If you listen to our Sandler podcast, there was an episode recorded a couple of months ago about it. And there's also several press releases and other things that'll be coming shortly, but you can pre-order it through the Sandler.com website. If you go up to the top of the Sandler store, logo, I think it is. You can pre-order the book now if you want. Otherwise, it'll be available officially in October.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for being a guest. We really appreciate it. Mike Crandall, Sandler trainer in Oklahoma City, many, many thanks. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you spending time on the weekend with us. If there's any topic you'd like us to address, please give me a call at area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. That's Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. Remember, if you measure it, you will manage it. Have a great weekend.